Welcome into another edition of the Cybersecurity and Cryptocurrency Podcast. Today is October the 23rd of 2018, and this is episode number 42. So today we are going to discuss quite a few different topics. We'll start in cybersecurity. We're going to talk a little bit about Proofpoint and what they're doing to expand their brand. Also going to touch on some ransomware topics that have recently happened. We're going to talk about some of the Obamacare stuff that happened, and if you signed up on that website, what that means for you. And we're also going to talk about trends now with Facebook since all these breaches have been happening and whatnot. And then to get a little nerdy, there's another flavor of Raspberry Pi that we'll discuss. As far as crypto goes, we're primarily going to focus on Coinbase and the things that they're doing to improve their brand as well. But first and foremost, I want to thank our sponsor, Southern Graphics T-Shirt Company, for all your T-shirt needs. Doesn't matter what kind of T-shirt you need, or if it's a polo shirt or whatever, or jerseys, doesn't matter. You can get all that stuff made at Southern Graphics T-Shirt Company. Their website's southerngraphicst-shirtco.com. Go check them out. So the first topic I want to touch on wasn't really on my list of topics, but something pretty cool that I figured out the other day using the Brave browser. I've been a big fan of the Brave browser since it came out, and the only problem I had with it was some of the plugins weren't there that are usually in Chrome. And so since this is built on Chrome, I said, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and see if I can hack this thing and get these plugins added manually. So what I did was I took the plugins directory for Chrome. I went in there and I looked at where all the plugins were, found those directories, and then I did the same thing for Brave. So while in Brave, I turned on a plugin that I knew I was not going to use. I forget which one it was now, some RSS feed or something that I knew that I was never going to use. And when you turn that on, it creates a new plugins folder in that plugins directory for Brave. So I then closed Brave completely, renamed that folder, the newly created folder, just put like a .old at the end of it. And then I went into Google Chrome, found the plugin that I wanted. It's the directories that they're in are very cryptic looking. It's just a bunch of random characters, so you have to kind of dig around and find which one you're trying to use. But I found the one I wanted. I copied it over to that Brave directory under its plugins, and then I renamed the folder to what the other folder was named. So, pretty cool stuff. Then I launched Brave, and then my plugin was there. So, although Brave doesn't support a whole bunch of different plugins, it does support stuff like Dashlane, LastPass, some stuff for torrenting and whatnot, but it does not support a whole bunch of others, and I know they're working on adding some of those to their platform, but it's based on Chrome. It's built off of Chromium, which is the open source version of Google Chrome, and they've been just taking that and building on top of it. So the plugins that work in Chrome should technically work in Brave as well. And so far, with the few that I've tested, they do also work in Brave. Pretty cool. So if you've switched over to Brave, but you're missing some of your plugins, there is hope. You can copy them over. So I'll post an article to that as well in the show notes. But on to other topics in cybersecurity. I've been working with Proofpoint for quite a while now, and they're a great spam filtering company, one of the best. And a new product offering that they're starting to get into is what's called a CASB, a Cloud Access Security Broker. And what that does is basically plays the middleman between all of your end users and your cloud or SaaS-based applications. Now, Proofpoint doesn't support a whole lot of platforms right now. They do have stuff like Box.com and a couple others in their platform now. They are adding support for quite a few more. So this product basically just came out, but everybody's trying to get into this CASB market, CASB space, because it's so big now with everybody moving to the cloud. So Proofpoint does have their own offering of this now. So I've seen the demo of it, and because it didn't really have much of the tools that we used, much of the cloud applications that we use at my gig, I told them to come back to me when they had support for more platforms. But still pretty cool to see more vendors getting into this. And, you know, we currently use Microsoft cloud app security, which is also a CASB solution that's tied into your Office 365 environment. And it has support for a handful of platforms as well. Things like Dropbox, AWS, ServiceNow, Workday, a couple others too. So it has a lot of integrations, pretty cool stuff. So we are using the Microsoft CASB. It's called Cloud App Security, and it's with your Office 365 stuff. It's very cost-effective, too, and this is the struggle for me when presenting this to, you know, higher-ups to get budgeting for this. If I go to them and tell them that the Microsoft CASB is $7 per admin that's using it, so it's like $30 a month because we only have a few admins that would use it, versus going with Proofpoint, which is going to be, you know, upwards of $10,000 or $20,000 for the year. So I have to go in and convince everybody that stuff like Proofpoint or Netskope is another great CASB solution. I've demoed their product. It is very nice. Netskope, I would say, is probably the leader, in my opinion, in CASB, simply because of the full proxy that they do, which essentially is taking everything from your client computer and sending it through the Netskope's systems, right? And what Netskope does from there is they see what applications you're using. So if you're going to Google Drive, for example, and your business doesn't support Google Drive, well, with Netskope, even though Google Drive may not be a native platform that they support, because they have this full proxy, they're able to identify all these cloud applications that people are using, which in turn allows you to block those applications. So Netskope will actually allow you to block Google Drive and other platforms that you may not support. You can tell it to block, you know, Dropbox or whatever it is. And for the platforms that it does fully support, they do have API integrations and whatnot that you can use that tie into various platforms and do all of the alerting and whatnot for PII and social security numbers and credit card numbers and everything that could be sensitive data. You can alert on things like that. It'll also alert you when documents have been uploaded or emailed outside of the organization that have PII. So Netskope's got a lot of really cool stuff built in. The Microsoft Cloud App Security is nowhere near that. It is simply an API plugin, and it monitors those APIs and pulls logs from that. So that's some of the biggest differences between cloud app security and, you know, things like Netskope that does that full proxy. With Netskope, you actually have to install a piece of software on every computer and then flip the switch and turn it on. So it's definitely a lot more robust. But the hard part for me is selling that to the executives and saying, hey, here's why we need Netskope, because it can do all these things. We can have a lot more granular control. But their argument is still, hey, well, this Microsoft one is $30 a month. We're just going to stick with that for now. So anyway, Proofpoint's got one now, too. I did not get pricing on it because it's still very early in the development stages on their end of things. So really, it needs to mature quite a bit more and support a whole bunch of other platforms. Proofpoint is also just doing API pulls, API calls, whatever you want to call it. And that's great and all, but it still doesn't provide that really super granular information that you would get from a Netskope-like tool. So check out Netskope if you're looking to get a CASB solution, if you're heavily cloud-based or SaaS-based, or you just want more control over what your end users are doing. So with Netskope, it could actually replace a content filter if you wanted it to, because that's built into Netskope. So if you've already got another service that's doing content filtering, like blocking websites, for example, you can do that with Netskope. And so you can save some money and cancel the subscription with whoever company is doing it now, your content filtering, and then buy Netskope, and you'll have a CASB and content filtering. So really cool stuff. I do like those tools quite a bit. It really gives you a lot of granularity, and it really shows you everything that the end users are doing, too. And it shows how many applications that they are using that are not authorized. So it's really, really cool stuff. Kind of scary at the same time, but very, very cool. Very useful tools. So check out a CASB if you're in the market for that kind of stuff. If you guys are heavily SaaS-based or cloud-based. There was a city in Connecticut that will remain unnamed. They did not mention it in the article. That got hit with ransomware, and they paid the ransom to have their files unlocked. And this is why the hackers continue to do ransomwares, because we pay them. Some people do, some people don't. But there was another company that got hit, and their philosophy was, don't pay them, we're just going to restore everything from backups. So two different schools of thought there. I know the FBI at one point came out and said, just pay the ransom. And then they since retracted that and said, no, never mind, don't pay the ransom. That just fuels the fire. So I just thought it was interesting that the city in Connecticut decided to go ahead and pay for it. Because apparently they could not recover from it. They didn't have good enough backups and didn't have a good enough disaster recovery plan to be able to recover fully from that ransomware attack. So very interesting schools of thought there for both ends of the spectrum on ransomware. So the lesson to be learned out of all of that is to make sure that your backups are very, very good. And if not, you need to fix them like right away. The other thing is segregation of those backups. Segregate it from everything else on your network. Make sure only certain things can get to it, because the ransomware is now going out and encrypting mapped drives on the computer. So if you have a drive mapped to a file share on a Windows server, it'll encrypt that file share as well. So make sure you got those backups stored in a very safe place. Offline backups are probably the best, but if not, at least keep them on a fully segregated network that only certain people can access and certain systems can access. That way your backups are protected and you can restore. And yes, restoring backups takes forever, and I get it, but at least it would save you the hassle and the money of paying the ransom. Plus, when you pay the ransom, who's to say that they're actually out of your systems? You know, who knows what they're really doing behind the scenes when they encrypt all your files and hold your ransom? They could be doing all kinds of other stuff too. So my philosophy would also be to just, you know, bite the bullet and say we're going to restore from backups. But for backups, a great tool that we've been using recently, it ties in with VMware, is called Veeam. V-E-E-A-M, I think is how it's spelled. It's a really weird spelling, or V-E-A-M. Anyway, it's very, very good for backing up virtual machines, and there are various services that you can back up to the cloud. So you can use Veeam to take snapshots of your virtual machines and back them up to the cloud and be able to restore it pretty much at the drop of a hat. So that's a very cool backup and recovery tool if you're in the market for that too. But don't pay that ransom, folks. It's just going to keep them doing the ransomware. And, you know, if people keep paying for it, you know, they're making money and they're going to continue doing it. So don't pay that ransom. Obamacare. This one really hacked me off. Obamacare was hacked. Their website was hacked. So anybody that went to healthcare.gov, well, I shouldn't say anybody, but this affected 75,000 people, which is a huge number if you think about it. And, you know, most people get health insurance through their company. So the few that did go to the healthcare.gov site, you know, that I don't even know what the total numbers were on their site, but this did affect 75,000 people. The breach leaked all of their personal information that they used on the website. Also, what they were saying, too, is in a different article, they were actually saying that the accounts that they got into were just brute forced, essentially. And they could just get into them. Or they did a password spray and they took a password list from, you know, GitHub or whatever and used that to get into a bunch of these accounts as well. So personal information from that system was stolen. So if you did sign up on healthcare.gov anytime in the last year or so, you might want to go out there and log in, and it should tell you whether or not you were affected as soon as you log in. But make sure you got a strong password on there too, because, you know, these password leaks that are all over GitHub and whatnot, you know, they can be used to get into various different sites. People are reusing passwords, so just make sure that you got a strong password on there and it's not the same password that you use for everything else. or set up two-factor at least on there. So anyway, that one kind of hacked me off more than anything. The government preaches how much we need to secure everything, but they can't even keep themselves secure. No one is safe. Saw some other articles today about Facebook, and teenagers are basically ditching Facebook for Facebook. Why do I say that? Because they're moving to Instagram, which is also owned by Facebook. So they're not really getting out of the Facebook realm. It's still a Facebook application, technically, but it's just called Instagram. I wonder how many of those teens realize that or even care. They probably just don't give a crap. I did think that was pretty interesting to see those statistics and to see that teens are either just deleting it altogether or moving to Instagram. So I would love to just delete altogether personally, but it's a whole nother story. Some other cool tech that recently came out that I love. Raspberry Pi alternatives are all over the place. There's a new one that's coming out from Odroid. It's the letter O and then Droid. It's called the H2. Odroid H2. And it's a tiny little motherboard just like a Raspberry Pi. And essentially, this thing packs a serious punch. It's very, very small, and it packs a huge punch. It's got 4 gigs of RAM on this thing. It's got a big quad-core Snapdragon processor on it. They're still in pre-production phases right now, but man, talk about awesome. So the Raspberry Pi traditionally had a dual-core processor, and it had 1 gig of RAM, which if you're really trying to use the Raspberry Pi for anything significant, like say you want to run a media server at home, which I attempted to do on Raspberry Pi, I was extremely unsuccessful because of the lack of processing power and the lack of memory on that Raspberry Pi. It was more hassle than it was worth. But with these alternative Raspberry Pis, they are very fast, and it's like having a smartphone from, you know, a couple years ago, and it's under $100. I saw them listed on Amazon, at least the older version of this, that's got 2 gigs of RAM, and it was, I think I want to say like $79, and that one also had a quad core, but this one's even beefed up even more. It uses an SD card for the hard drive. So if you like those small form factor systems like I do, that's a very, very nice upgrade, and it's supposed to be less than $100. At least that's what they're touting. So that's great for all the gadget-loving people out there. I'm working on a project to take my... I have 3 Raspberry Pis at home, and I'm working on a project to make all 3 of those into a cluster node. So far, it's not been the easiest thing in the world, but I am working through those details. But to make it a cluster, it's going to be a lot faster, and then I could maybe use it as a media server, as a Plex server, or whatever at my house. So I'm hoping that works out, but it's definitely not the easiest thing to set up, and I'm just kind of struggling with some hurdles using that. Other news in cryptocurrency, Coinbase is making some waves. They recently announced that they're going to... Coinbase has this subsidiary called Custody, Coinbase Custody. And they just got approval from the SEC to be a financial custodian. So what the hell is a financial custodian? Essentially, it allows for keeping whatever valuable assets, storing them in an extremely secure manner so that nobody can get to it, kind of no matter what, unless, you know, it's authorized, then you got to go through multiple steps just to even get the funds back out of that system. So they are now approved to do that. So Coinbase Custody, that's one step further for them and what they're doing. So that's pretty cool news. As I mentioned previously, they already listed the 0x coin. So that's pretty cool. It's still kind of floating around a dollar-ish, maybe 90 cents to a dollar. But pretty cool stuff. They're continuing to open that platform up. And they also just announced that they are allowing USDC, which is a stable coin that uses US dollars. I have not seen this one on their app just yet, but they did announce today that they're going to start allowing purchases and transactions using USDC. So that's really cool stuff too. So Coinbase is definitely making some waves. I think it's just great for everybody in the crypto communities. That's all I had for today. I want to thank our sponsor again, Southern Graphics T-Shirt Company. Their website is southerngraphicst-shirtco.com. Go check them out. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at eEnglish34 on Twitter, at eEnglish34. Hit me up on there. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we will talk again soon.